Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porther with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. NHL free agency beginning today, and it's already been a wild week in the National Hockey League. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Sean Rourke from NHL.com. Sean, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Oh, so happy to be joining you this morning. Great day in hockey today.
It is absolutely a great day in hockey today. A little bit later in the year than normal, but it's going to be an awesome day of free agency beginning today in the National Hockey League. I want to start, though, Sean, with some moves that have been made already. We've seen a lot, and you know, dating back to the draft last week, Seth Jones traded to the Blackhawks. Marc-Andre Fleury traded away from Vegas yesterday. Ovechkin signing back with the Capitals. What's been the most intriguing move thus far, in your opinion, that we've seen over the course of the last week or so?
I think it's got to be Marc-Andre Fleury, right? Going to Chicago. A, it came out of nowhere that Chicago would be the team that would be involved. You know, their team that said that had moved a number of their pieces and said they were going to be in some sort of a competitive rebuild, which seems to be the new buzzword around the NHL. And then, you know, yesterday they trade for Marc-Andre Fleury from Vegas. Vegas decided that they couldn't keep two goalies at that price point and needed the $7 million in cap space to do other shopping that they need to do this week. So, and now they've added Tyler Johnson. And as you mentioned, Seth Jones. So a competitive rebuild has gone right back into, we think we can make some sort of a run here. With the caveat, does Marc-Andre Fleury show up? Right? He said repeatedly he just wanted to play for Vegas, and if he wasn't going to play for Vegas, there was the implied threat that he would not play hockey anymore, and I think that all needs to be sorted out. Or maybe he's just a way station to someplace else, and Chicago's going to try and flip him for more assets. So, to me, that's the most intriguing move that's been made so far, but there's been a ton of them.
Yeah, maybe Pittsburgh again, maybe. For Marc-Andre, possibly. So, Sean, is Chicago better than I think they are? Like, am I missing something here?
Look, they've added some really key pieces, I think. I think Seth Jones, he's had a down year last year, but so did a lot of people in Columbus. I'm still somewhat sold on him. I think he makes them better. They're getting Jonathan Toews back. That makes them better. If Marc-Andre decides to play, you're talking about the reigning Vezina winner. That's got to be good for a couple of wins and protect their D a little bit. But I'm still not 100% sold on that team. A lot of their core pieces are gone now, and they're relying on a lot of unproven players or players just starting to prove themselves. And look, the West is just a meat grinder, right? We saw that in the playoffs this year. It's just a really hard, both the Central and the West, Nashville fans know, like, there's almost no easy games involved in all of that. So I don't know if they're elite yet. They're certainly better than they were a week ago.
Sean, Alex Ovechkin re-signing yesterday with the Washington Capitals, $9.5 million per year for the next 5 years. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone that he's back in Washington. He is 35 years old, and he is chasing down one of the most hallowed records in all of sports, and that is the goal record in the National Hockey League. And I think, you know, they did the math yesterday. He would have to average around 33 goals per season for the next 5 years to break Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal record. Do you think Alex Ovechkin can get that done? Is that too high of expectations for him now that he's 35 years old and will be 40 at the end of this contract? What do you think of that deal for Ovechkin and the Capitals? And what do you think his chances are to take down Gretzky's all-time goal record?
Look, as far as the deal, it's a no-brainer, and people are like, it's too long, he's going to be 40, it's too much money, it's almost $10 million a year. Alex Ovechkin has earned everything that he gets, right? Like, what he's done for that franchise is almost financially immeasurable. So if you overpay for him a little bit, so be it. I mean, that's the price of doing business, and there's no way that they could move forward without Alex Ovechkin, and you know, because they couldn't afford him, that just couldn't happen. So I have no issue with that. And then, excuse me, you know, you look at his money, I mean, at his goal production, and I really have no issue there either. In the last three full seasons that he played, 36, 38, 38, and we say he needs 35, like, are you going to bet against this guy? He scored 18 in 24 games last year. So look, he plays a game when he was young, he was really physical, and you know, you kind of worried about it. Now he's kind of that guy, like, he'll play physical if you need him to, but he's kind of that guy that finds those holes and those soft spots in the zone. You know, he's not a guy that's, you know, going full out 200 feet every shift. He's become like an elite defenseman, right? He's become like a Duncan Keith or a Roman Josi or whoever you want to talk about, where they kind of pick their spots to accelerate, pick their spots to put their body in danger, and then, you know, manage the rest of the game. And I think that's what Alex has done. And then, you know, to me, the last thing is, unless you stop taking penalties against the Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin is going to score goals. And I don't know that this is his last contract, right? Jaromir Jagr is still playing, and to me, they're the same kind of player. You know, they figure out how to play. They figure out what to do. They figure out when they've lost the mile off their fastball, they find another pitch to use a comparison from another sport. Like, Alex is one of the smartest people in the game, and I don't think he gets enough credit for the way that he finds ways to, you know, everybody's like, oh, Alex Ovechkin's in his office and he scores, you know, stop him. Well, nobody can stop him because he's smarter than everybody else when it comes to scoring. So I would not bet against him, personally.
Sean, as you look at Nashville's competitive rebuild, where do you think the Predators are? How important do you think Mikael Granlund is, you know, to their short-term future here? And what do you think the view is on him league-wide?
Well, I think he's a valuable player, right? And I think he's really valuable for Nashville. He's kind of that second-line center. You know, I know that they've gotten Cody Glass, and there's a lot of excitement about that, and there should be. He's a high-valued prospect. I don't know, even in a competitive rebuild, if this year you're playing him at second-line center. I think Granlund's very important in that role. You know, I know that John Hines relied on him a lot. So there's value across the league, but I think what you're seeing, and we talked about it a little bit in the move of Fleury and some of the other things that have happened, with a flat cap world, teams can't get what they want, right? They have to take what they need, and they can't, you know, pie in the sky. Oh, I'd really like, you know, I think every contending team would love to have Mikael Granlund and be like, look, we can slot him in that bottom six, and, you know, and you look at, like, Tampa Bay and their run the last 2 years. It was built down the middle, and so I think any contending team's trying to do that, but with limited resources and limited finances because of the flat cap world that we're in, I think a lot of free agents are going to find that their services are not quite as in demand as they had hoped they would be. So to me, that's a player that's really going to be interesting. Can somebody free up the money to kind of blow him out of the water, or, you know, are the Predators going to be able to circle back and say, look, this is where the market is, and we're willing to pay it, and you know what you have here, and grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Sean Rourke from NHL.com on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Sean, to that point, I mean, the Predators, it's been an interesting offseason. They've traded Victor Arvidsson. They've traded Ryan Ellis. Pekka Rinne has retired, losing Kalle Järnkrok to the expansion draft. There's been a lot of change this offseason. Where do you think this team is right now, and what do you think the plan should be for David Poile and the Predators as they try to kind of navigate through this transition period that they're in right now?
Well, I think it's difficult, right? I think it's kind of walking a tightrope. You just mentioned some of the guys that left, and as you were mentioning them, and I was thinking about them this morning as I, you know, thought about joining you guys, like, that list of players are, to me, Nashville Predators, right? Like, they've been a team that I followed since they've come into the league closely and, you know, love the way they play. And all three of those guys are part of that identity, right? I mean, you think about Victor Arvidsson and the way he played, and then Ryan Ellis and the way he played. They're physical players. They, you know, all out all the time. And that's always been a hallmark of the Predators. And it had to be for a long time, because they were trying to be competitive. And then they entered this period where they were very competitive, and the team started to change a little bit. There were a lot of trades made to bring in people. And all of that had to be done. Like, that's the thing I'm thinking about. I know that, you know, in Nashville, you read the papers and you listen to the talk radio, and David Poile's on a bit of a hot seat. And, you know, would you trade anything that David did for the run to the Stanley Cup final, that first run? Like, it's such an amazing part of a franchise. And unlike any other sport, trades and free agency are what drive progression. Right, it's so much more pronounced in the NHL than it is anywhere else. and GM swing and miss. Like 5 years ago, they were ready to put Lou Lamoriello out to pasture. The game had passed them by. And, you know, he's GM of the year. He's gotten the New York Islanders to the Eastern Conference Final 2 years in a row. So, you know, I think just like players, right, it's kind of, you know, you have some good trades, some bad trades, some good days, some bad days. I think it's the same kind of thing. Now, as Nashville moves forward, you know, it's kind of tricky because they still have all those pieces from that championship run that they've added who should still be in their prime and should be able to perform. And now they need people to come up behind them, you know, and really take that mantle and keep. To me, it's the culture, right, of the Predators. They've always played a certain way, and I think they need to play that way to succeed. So now it's about bringing David France and Cody Glass and all of those players into this ecosystem and making them fit with what you want to do. But, you know, look, I think Juuse Saros is going to be one of the top goalies in the league for, you know, several years, and I know he's coming up on restricted free agency, and that's going to be tricky next year, and David has to plan for that. You still have Roman Josi. You still have Ekholm. So they're not, to me, they're not a team that's out of it, but they're going to have some things go right to be competitive and to be a part of that playoff picture.
Sean, last thing for you here, a guy that Predators fans were excited about, should he get to free agency, was Gabriel Landeskog. And come out, he's going to end up back in Colorado, 8 years, $7 million per year. How important is Landeskog to what Colorado has been able to build, and how important was it for them to get him back locked down and in the fold for the Avalanche, do you think?
I think it was really important, and Joe Sakic, their GM, you know, has done a masterful job, but now he's got an issue, right? He's still got to get a goalie under contract, and he's handed out a lot of money. Cale Makar is signed, Nathan MacKinnon, you know, they have Rantanen, they have some pieces that are taking a lot of their salary cap, and, you know, Grubauer is sitting out there, and you know, I think Colorado is hoping that nobody blows him out of the water, you know, because you look at that team as a goalie, and you're like, this is a great team to play for, right? To have the puck all the time. They're good defensively when they don't have the puck. They're going to win a lot of games. They got a chance to win a Stanley Cup. Those are all things you want as a goalie, you know, and you might take a little bit of a hometown discount, so to speak. But, you know, somebody starts throwing money at you, it's kind of hard to say, well, I really feel comfortable here. I feel a lot more comfortable with $3 million more in my bank account every year. I'll find my own comfort. So, but I think Gabriel Landeskog was really important because, again, so much of it is culture, right? When you think about the teams that have won, and again, I'll go back to Tampa Bay a little bit. It's the culture of that team, right? People took lesser roles to win. Steven Stamkos wasn't the guy anymore, and he was okay with that. You know, he let Kucherov and Point go ahead of him. You know, the same thing on the defense. You know, there were guys that think they should be the guy, and they weren't, you know, and you think about their third line, those are all guys that could play second line minutes. Some of them could play first line minutes, but there was a culture that's been instilled there. And you know, I think that same thing is in Colorado, and I think Landeskog drives a ton of that, right? Nathan MacKinnon's the best player on that team. Rantanen's really good, but I think Gabriel Landeskog kind of drives the train in that room and makes sure everybody's on the same page and that they're doing what they need to do to be the best team they can. And those players, you know, you look at stats and you might say he's the fourth most important forward on their team. Not in that room, he's not.
Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting start to free agency today, and it's been a wild week so far in the NHL with trades galore in the National Hockey League. Sean Rourke from the NHL.com has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sean, great stuff, brother. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and I can't wait to see how today unfolds. I mean, it's really going to be amazing. It's been one of the craziest off seasons that I've ever been involved with, and I don't think it ends today. I think teams are still trying to figure out their finances, and it's going to go a few days, at least because, like you mentioned, it's later. It's not going to mess up my 4th of July holiday.
That's right. You'll be in good shape on that front, Sean. Appreciate you, brother. Great stuff.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Absolutely. Hey, you as well. Sean Rourke from NHL.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rexford. When we come back, we'll react to what Sean had to say. Look ahead to NHL free agency. How active or non-active will the Predators be? And what's the concern level right now with Mikhail Granlund and his future with the Predators? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Blue Raider Blitz is rolling across the mid-state to a town near you, led by Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders football head coach Rick Stockstill. This community-wide event will be a guaranteed fun time for the whole family. Each of the stops will include food, ticket giveaways, and a chance to mix and mingle with MTSU coaching staffs and Lightning. Today's stops include Puckett's in Columbia from noon to 1:30 and Lee Victory Park in Smyrna from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information on where you can attend, head to goblueraiders.com/tour. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porth there with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Sean Rourke from NHL.com for joining us in the last segment. Free agency beginning today in the National Hockey League, and a couple of interesting names that are out there that involve the Nashville Predators. Eric Halla, a free agent. Mikhail Granlund, a free agent as well. And Bob McKenzie, who is a great insider in the NHL from TSN, has linked David Rittich to the Nashville Predators as well, which is a backup goaltender. So we talked about maybe, you know, different options at backup goaltender. Rittich apparently on the radar for the Predators. We'll see what ends up happening on that front. But, Joe, I want to ask you about Granlund. I made the called shot last week that the first day of free agency would come and go, and Mikhail Granlund will be unsigned. He will not be anywhere. If that happens and we get through today and there are some deals being made left and right all over the place throughout the league, and Granlund is not one of them, how concerned would you be if you're a Predators fan at that point? Is that good news that maybe he's not off the board in day one if he's not back in Nashville? What do you think the future, the immediate future, looks like for Granlund, and how important do you think he is for the Predators to bring back at this point?
I think he's really important, and I think that may be a good thing. And I also think that my coworker Dom Lucisen, and I sure hope I said that right.
I think you did.
So I think like he's got his ranking in the top 50 available UFAs, and Granlund, and he also tiers it. And Granlund, he has as useful depth. And if Dom's perception of Granlund applies to most of the league, then I think I like the Preds' chances, and I like the Preds' chances, you know, to get off cheaper than, you know, than maybe Granlund and his agent would like. I mean, here's what Dom wrote. Granlund's best comp suggests 3 years. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's been in a steep decline over the past few years. That only looks to continue. Another point here that you know he was the most used forward, of course, as we know, for the Preds, 19 minutes 28 seconds per game, but as Dom writes, scoring 27 points in 51 with that much ice time is not a good sign. And the question, this is still Dom, quote, the question is whether the last two seasons are his own decline or a product of being in a Nashville system where forwards always seem to struggle. And of course, it's interesting even to hear that because it's not the same system during that whole time. It's two different systems. And that yet people still want to sort of apply the forwards go to Nashville to not produce. Right. It's been a change now last couple of years. But that's interesting. If that's how people view Granlund, then he probably is valued here as much as anywhere or more than anywhere.
Yeah, like my question is, like, what lengths are you willing to go to if you're David Poile and the Predators to get him back? I mean, that's really my question. I think we all know he's important. I think we all know that John Hines and the coaching staff love Mikhail Granlund and the role that he plays here. What lengths are you willing to go to bring him back? You know, if I'm Granlund, I'm probably looking for a 3-4 year deal. And I'm just not doing that if I'm the Predators. I'm not going more than two with Granlund. It doesn't make any sense to me to go more than two with Granlund. He's 29 years old. He'd be 31 at the end of that. Would actually be 32 by the time his playing days were done at the end of that contract. And you're in a spot right now with everything else that you've already done this offseason where you're just going younger. And you got Cody Glass in. Like, at some point, Cody Glass is going to need to play second-line center minutes. And that doesn't mean you can't sign Granlund because you can move him over to the wing. And I'm not sure how quickly the Predators want to do that. But, like, if I'm the Predators, I'm not really budging much off of those 2 years. And if that's a problem for Granlund, like, I'm probably willing to move on at that point if I'm the Predators. I just wonder if they are willing to move on because we know, as you said, He is very important to them. He is very important to what they do. I think, you know, if you judge it based purely on statistics, he did not blow anybody away last year. And Dom brings up some good points there. I mean, he played a lot in 27 points in 51 games. That's not a ton. But I think if you watch this team last year, you know how important Granlund was. I don't expect him to just have this steep decline in the next couple of years where he's not that guy anymore. I just wonder if you're the Predators, how far are you willing to go to bring him back in here? And I do think there needs to be kind of a line of demarcation where if he won't come off of a term or a dollar amount, you just say, all right, well, it's going to suck to not have Mikhail Granlund, but you can't just keep doing that and overpaying and extending guys for too much term.
So it sounds like you're souring on Granlund.
I'm not necessarily souring on Granlund, but to me, it runs counterproductive to a lot of what you've done this offseason to then turn around and sign Granlund to a 3 or 4 year deal. Like, at some point, you're running out of spots in the top six for these young guys to come up and progress. So I have no problem with Granlund coming back. I have no problem with him coming back for 1 or 2 years. I think if it's much longer than that, I'm just not really willing to have that discussion if I'm the Predators.
I think the way he played and the importance he had in a variety of ways, again, I believe that if they get him, I think they have a better chance of making the playoffs, and that might be like the difference maker for me. Just on paper at this time of year, whether they get him or not, I do look at this, and I wonder, as we go back to the trading deadline, because, of course, this is tied to that. We set it back at the time. But I do wonder if we overestimated possibly what Poile was being offered.
It's possible.
For Granlund.
It's possible.
Although he's still like –
I find it hard to believe nobody offered him a second-round pick.
Yeah, he's exactly the kind of player a lot of teams trade for at that point, right?
Right.
But regardless, I think it's important, but I hear what you're saying. It's got to be – I think shorter term, and of course the money's always important. It's got to be club friendly to a certain extent, of course.
And I think the money's less important if it's shorter term. Like, you can probably go a little bit more money if it's shorter term, but there's no scenario where I'm going 3 or 4 years with Granlund. I'm not doing that.
So 2 years? Would you go 2 years? $10 million?
I would. Yeah.
Okay. Would you go 2 years? $11 million?
Now we're getting a little close to.
Okay, so we found the.
Yeah.
Because Dom's projection is $5.5 million over 4.2 years. You know, but I guess there's some sort of mathematical formula involved in that.
Can you sign it for 4.2 years?
I mean, there's no way. I agree. Like, there's no. Yeah. I don't know. We will trade you in, in January. I agree that there's no way you want to do that much, that amount of time. No. And look, if you're Granlund, I mean, if you did a 2-year deal, does the cap overall get any better than when you're up in 23?
Maybe, but that's why this is an interesting spot for him, because he's 29. And when you're up in 23, you're going to be 32 years old. I mean, your big payday is not happening.
You want to get a longer, you want term right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if he's going to get it, but I think that's probably what he's searching for. At this point, we'll come back. We'll talk with Teresa Walker from the Associated Press, who is over in Tokyo covering the Olympics. Going to be a great conversation with her coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porth are with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And not Wednesday morning everywhere. It is not Wednesday morning in Tokyo, Japan. And that is where our next guest is coming to us live from. The great Teresa Walker from the Associated Press joins us now via Zoom from Tokyo. Teresa, thanks so much for taking time to join us. What's going on in your neck of the woods? What time is it out there? What's happening, Teresa? Do we have Teresa? We'll check back in with her and see if we can get Teresa figured out on that front.
Teresa.
We are. This is the first time.
She's texting
me. Well, this is the first time we've conducted an interview from a different continent.
Yeah, she did tell me via text that she just downloaded the first season of House of Cards.
So, oh, really?
She's taking a break from House of Cards.
There you go.
To come on the show.
Very nice.
Hopefully,
we'll see if we can get connected with Teresa coming up here in just a few minutes. But the Olympics off to a pretty impressive start at this point. Now, we're sitting here live watching a water polo match, and I'm not even sure if it's live or not, because you never know on NBC nowadays what's live and what's not between Hungary and the United States. But I believe we have Teresa ready and good to go. Teresa joining us live via Zoom from Tokyo. Teresa, what's going on? How are things going?
Good, except that it's 10:35 my time, and yes, because it's you guys, I'm staying up. You know, this was a day. It was all men's games today, four men games. The U.S. routed Iran was kind of the highlight of that, and you know, I just went over there to turn in my, you know, the saliva PCR test, which is just so much fun to do every single day of these games. You know, watch, you know, help with quotes after the men's game, write a story, and yes. I've spent most of the last few hours, you know, I think I'm on episode 4 right now of House of Cards, but, you know, between all the other stuff I've done. So, yeah, this is my one night to maybe sleep in late. So it must be that I like you guys. So that's a good thing.
Well, we appreciate that. We like you as well. We appreciate you taking time to join us. Teresa, well, just from your vantage point, what's this event been like to cover so far in the Olympics in Tokyo with, you know, everything going on with COVID over there and the restrictions that are in place? What has this event been like to cover with no fans in the buildings as well?
This is my sixth Olympics, and it's easily the most unique. I mean, it's the, you know, you can call them the quarantine games, the pandemic games, all of those apply. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here in my hotel room, and, you know, I can't walk out of the hotel. Okay. You know, I'm kind of quarantined to the hotel. I can catch a bus. I can see the arena. I am two blocks from the Saitama Super Arena, which is where the Predators opened the 2000 season as part of the Japan series against the Penguins. And I mean, I could have a nice little 10-minute walk in the morning, and at night, it's really quiet. It's a gorgeous neighborhood. And I have to take a bus. And, you know, me and four of my colleagues, we're here, we're on the same floor. And, you know, we have to take the bus over, we have to take the bus back, you know, because essentially, you know, we're in quarantine, with the exception of our credential allowing us to go to the venues and do our job. And, you know, and that's the thing, when you do get out of your hotel room, you're wearing a mask. You're masked up for 12, 14 hours a day. And let's just say this. I always thought Tennessee was pretty doggone hot. Saitama, when I checked the weather a few minutes ago, at 10 o'clock at night, it still felt like 89. Oh. I mean, the humidity here, my hair right now looks like Monica's in Friends when they went to the Bahamas. Not far off, but, you know, not as bad, but I can see it from here. So it's just, it's unique. I can't, you know, we've been using Uber Eats to try to, because, you know, venue food, it's like, well, you'll eat at venues. Well, there's no concession stand. There's no fans. So, you know, they've got some food and drinks inside the workroom, but, you know, the rice balls tend to go quickly in the day. The hot dogs come from a freezer and go in the microwave. I'm saying no to those. And, so we've tried Uber Eats, getting them to deliver to the very front of the security area where we go in to the arena has been interesting the last couple of days. So, it's just different. But then you get into the stadium. Inside, you get seated, and it's like the Olympics. You know, you've got games going on. You know, it's weird. They have halftime entertainment, because remember, it was just barely, not even 2 weeks ago, that they decided, yes, no, not even local fans would be able to come to these games. But there is still, you know, there's a robot that they have come out sometimes, at least once a day, for, you know, to shoot shots from the free throw line, three-point line, and at half court. And today, the robot missed not just once, but twice. So hopefully Skynet is not as close to taking over as I thought.
But so you better really watch yourself. Those things, I've seen movies about this stuff, Teresa.
I know. Terminator 2 told us to be very, very, very careful about this stuff. So, then the mix zone, though, is different. You know, Joe's been at Olympics, and, you know, usually at the mix zones, there's a, you know, like that fencing blocks you from the coaches and the athletes as they come through, and you talk to them and do interviews. Well, there is a second fence to create like a concrete moat between the journalists and the athletes. And on like the second day of local volunteers had these the cheaper selfie sticks to help reach those phones out to do the interviews in the mix zone. And, you know, then, you know, 20 minutes after the game, they've got the news conferences. And, you know, so, the, you know, it's just been so different. You know, like Greg Popovich, probably not walking through any mix zone, so he goes straight to the press conference room. But you know, it feels like you're having to work maybe a little harder than even usual that we do at a normal Olympics, because it is so different. You know, Team USA, at least the women, they're doing Zooms, after their games a little while later to help people back home, because the roster for these Olympics were cut. You know, there were going to be more journalists here, but because of the pandemic, those numbers got cut, and those credentials got cut across the board. So, they're trying their best to help people back home cover them. And, it's just incredibly unique and different. And, I'll just say this, I'm really glad that tomorrow will be in 14 hours before you guys. I'll be on Thursday, a little bit closer to the end of this. So, once you walk through that security, and you're working, it's an Olympics.
Do not taunt Happy Fun Robot. This is, especially if like he's missing shots, you don't want to mess with that. So, in your corner of the world, Teresa, on the hoops front, from your vantage point, and I know you're focusing on the women's hoops, how is the world in terms of catching up with us? And what is your take on Popovich and his struggling team?
Well, with the women, here's the thing. You look at Nigeria, they're just making their second appearance in the Olympics as the women's program. And yet so many players on that roster played at U.S. colleges. And I'm writing a story moving in the next 24, 36 hours on some of the players, some of these Americans who have dual citizenship who are playing on some other teams. Nigeria is the team that has one of the Agwemike, NECA sister, and nearly had NECA, 2016 WNBA MVP, and that got turned down. And they had another sister who, Elizabeth Williams, a Duke player, WNBA player. They tried to have her on the roster, and they kind of stopped it. And, Nigeria's got Ruthie Bolton as an assistant on that team, and she hadn't been able to get to the arena yet because they haven't got her credential with the other assistants to come to the games and coach. They came as close to the U.S. yesterday, as any team has in the Olympics since Russia in the semifinals of 2004. There's talent on these rosters. Serbia won a bronze medal in Rio 3 years ago, five years ago, and they kick this whole thing off with a big win. Belgium makes their Olympic debut, and they beat Australia. I think it was Australia. Or was it Canada? They beat one of those things. They got a big win in their very first Olympic game. These women play enough with each other, whether they're in Europe, leagues in Russia, whether they played each other in college, they don't back down. And, they're not afraid of Team USA anymore. It's not like, they're quivering because this is the first time they've ever seen Diana Taurasi or Sue Bird or Asia Wilson. They know these people. They're very familiar with them. And that awe factor that, remember, we saw that in 1992 with the men's dream team, where people were just wanting to get interviews, or get autographs and pictures with Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley. Well, that is completely gone on the women's side. And this is a tournament that is wide open, and we'll see, if the women can extend a streak with their seventh straight gold medal in this event. Now for the men, they looked an awful lot more like what we were expecting. Yeah, I mean, this team, they got three guys that played in the finals here, just a few, 13 hours maybe before their first game, the loss to France. And I know a lot of people are like, I don't care that they routed Iran, they lost to France. How could they do that and snap that long winning streak? Well, again, they just weren't quite clicking. And, it's kind of funny. Anyone who's been around Popovich, we're used to the short answers. And essentially what he was saying on Sunday night was we weren't consistent and shots didn't go in. Guess what? Those shots went in today. I mean, whether it was from two, whether it was from three, they felt more, they looked more comfortable. They moved more fluidly. I'm trying to think, Drew Holiday from the Bucks. He started today, and Pop said, listen, that's a guy that, it's obvious. And, you know, crazy enough to think that he just got finished making a run to an NBA championship, and he's fresh and playing strong. And when you see him on the court, it looks good. But this game today against Iran, they looked like Team USA. They're running up and down the court. They're throwing down dunks. Everybody's knocking down threes, you know, nothing but string. So, you know, now, but this was against Iran, whose best NBA, former NBA player was Ahmed Adadi. So, you know, and so we'll see if this continues. You know, they play, I think it's Saturday night here against the Czech Republic. So advancing out of group play shouldn't be a problem for the men, even with the one loss, because they had a huge point differential against Iran. So, you know, but guess what? The measures for the U.S. and women and men in basketball remain: bring home a gold, or else there's going to be trouble. So that's the standard that they've set, and that's the standard they have to meet.
No doubt. So now, before we let you go, Teresa, first of all, I hope you're ready for an actual, more like real mixed zone here, because that's apparently what it's kind of going to be like post-practice with various players. But also, so are you telling me that you are not going to be asking the first question at every Vrabel presser now? I mean, I'm counting on this. I think Vrabel's counting on this.
Hey, I am a little busy over here, Joe. I just wanted to at least try to, you know, take advantage of technology and ask the one question I think that everybody wanted to get answered.
Well done, you know, by the way.
Thank you. I did try, you know, and so I'm not going to be sending over a question every morning. I kind of have my hands full here, you know, these 12 to 14 hour days. You know, it's I'm keeping an eye on things that are happening there. So I will be ready when I do get back on the ground over there, which will be, I land August 8th. I may not make it back there before they go and play their preseason opener against Atlanta. I'm just saying. I've been warned. Maybe take 2 days coming back from Japan. I'm just being told.
I don't think anybody would blame you on that front. Teresa Walker from the Associated Press has been kind enough to join us here on the show live from Tokyo. Teresa, we appreciate so much you taking time to join us. Hope you go get some sleep now.
I'm going to try because yeah, I haven't had a whole lot of that. And, you know, if you haven't heard my story about the night I spent in Narita Airport a week ago, I'll tell that to you later.
Oh, boy. I'm looking forward to that one. Teresa, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Bye, Teresa Walker does a great job from the Associated Press, covering all things here locally and, as we know, all things Olympics as well. We'll discuss the Olympics a little bit more when we come back. Also get to some breaking news on the Mikhail Granlund front as well, with the Nashville Predators. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Thanks to Teresa Walker for joining us in the last segment, live from Tokyo in the Olympics. And Joe, the big story yesterday coming out of the Olympics was Simone Biles withdrawing herself from team play in the competition for USA Gymnastics. Coming out earlier this morning, she's not going to be participating in individual periods this morning either. And it was kind of interesting. This was developing as we were on the air yesterday. And at first was concerns about an injury, and then it was withdrawing from mental health, and then concerns went back to an injury. And then Simone Biles later coming out and saying she just wasn't in the right headspace to compete yesterday with the USA Olympic team. And that generated a ton of reaction online, as we figured that it would, as you and I discussed it off air yesterday. What are your thoughts on the Simone Biles situation, the reaction to it, and what this means for her now, both moving forward here in this competition, but just your take on the situation as a whole with mental health in sports?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's shocking that this situation created just some outlandishly stupid takes from people. I had a really good debate with someone in media yesterday about this, and I think it's an interesting situation. I'm probably a little bit in between on it, but as far like anybody saying she's mentally weak or something is a moron. And I promise you, you think you can do anything close to what she's been able to do in sports, you know, give me a break. Some of these people saying some of this stuff are already demonstrated morons, so it doesn't matter. But I think where we are in sports is starting to look at mental health differently, and I think some athletes have helped that along and actually talking about it. And I kind of look at, like, really, if someone has an issue like this, you should look at it kind of like an injury. But beyond that, in this situation, Nancy Armour wrote a great column for USA Today. Nancy knows gymnastics better than anyone. Longtime friend, longtime colleague of Teresa's, actually at the AP. But you know, if you have this issue, this is very dangerous in gymnastics. So people are kind of missing that too. That the term is the twisties.
Yeah.
If you're not 100% like I'm locked in at the absolute best, then
remember
you
that
shouldn't do it.
That beam is 4 inches wide.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the reaction to this is not even worth acknowledging. It's so stupid. But I will say that, like, I've seen people like, you know, this should be celebrated. And I think Simone should be credited for even showing up at the Olympics. She didn't need to do this. She's already the GOAT. And she has talked about how, you know, USA Gymnastics and all the abuse and NASA and all that stuff. I mean, she felt it was important to help shepherd the whole thing along and be there this time. I think she should be certainly not criticized. I think she should be praised for being willing to do this. I will say it sucks still. I mean, it still stinks. Like, this is every 4 years you have this opportunity, and she wasn't able to do it. So to me, it's like an injury. Like, I'm not like celebrating an injury that took me out of competition, right? I mean, it stinks. But as far as her being criticized for it, most of it is just out. It's just ridiculous. Some of it in terms, I get, again, the debate I had with another media person was, why is this something we're celebrating? I'm like, okay, I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, ideally, she participates and helps the team win gold and now wins the individual all around, and she's not able to. But I think there's also courage involved here on her part in these decisions.
We were talking about Mikhail Granlund a couple of segments ago in free agency for the Nashville Predators, and there is now some breaking news on the Mikhail Granlund front. This coming from Pierre LeBrun. Mikhail Granlund is headed to the market, which means he will be testing free agency. Adam Vingan, friend of the show and your colleague at The Athletic, reporting that Granlund's agent, Todd Diamond, tells Vingan that a return to the Predators is, quote, unlikely, quote, talks led nowhere. So it looks like, and again, I want to stress looks like because it looked the same way last year, looks like Mikhail Granlund is going to be hitting the free agent market and that a return to the Predators does not look like it's in the cards at the moment.
Unless the same thing happens.
The same thing happens.
So what if that happens? What if it comes around and that he just isn't getting close to what he's hoping to get? Is it possible that, again, they could just come back together?
Could be. I would find that to be unlikely at this point. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen twice. My guess would be we've probably seen the last of Mikhail Granlund in a Predators uniform.
So, and I see Porth has already responded to this on Twitter. I don't have it in front of me, but basically, youth movement, right? And I agree. I mean, like, Cody Glass, hey, this is more opportunity for him to really see what he has in the type of situations you want him playing in. Duchesne's still on the roster. There's complications. I think right now, at this moment, they're less likely to make the playoffs.
I would agree. Now, we've talked about this a lot, and we talked about Granlund maybe getting moved at the deadline. And again, without knowing exactly what the offers were for David Poile and the Predators, part of how we judged that trade was the ability to re-sign Mikhail Granlund, and now it looks like they're not going to. So does that change the way you feel about them holding on to Granlund this past year and getting out in the first round?
No, I'm the exact same. They should have dealt him at the trading deadline. And I said the only way that I would change is if they did sign him. So he should have traded him for something. They made the playoffs. Good for them. It was a good achievement for the guys in the room on the ice, but for the organization, they should have traded him.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Rob from Franklin, who wants to weigh in. Rob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, gents. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. It's a very, very different situation with Mikhail Granlund this time around. And that would be, he did perform very, very well at the end of the season and during the playoffs. And he showed off that he was a clutch goal scorer, and he played a little bit more gritty than he did through, you know, say the first 60 or 70% of the season. And so I think that they are in good position to really land something in free agency. About a week ago, maybe 10 days ago, I phoned in and I thought for certain that that there was going to be more movement, and, you know, Talian Crope being selected by the Kraken, I thought was interesting. I thought for sure they were going to go after a lead center like Johansson. Maybe much less Duchesne, but it'll be very interesting. Apparently, that, you know, reading a little bit about it, that the trade market is really going to be lively over the next couple of days, particularly as people either miss or make on their free agents. So, wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. We appreciate it. I mean, look, it's been in the last week in the NHL has been pretty incredible with the movement that we've seen. There have been a lot of trades. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury just won the Vezina Trophy. He got traded away from Vegas yesterday for essentially nothing to Chicago, and that frees up $7 million for Vegas, and we'll see whether or not he shows up in Chicago. He may not. The Blackhawks traded Seabrook to the Lightning for Tyler Johnson, which ends up, and the Lightning are going to put Seabrook on LTIR, so they just created more cap space. So the Lightning are going to be right back there and being competitive. That probably means they can keep a guy like Killorn, who could have been an option to trade for. I mean, it's been a heck of a run so far for trades in the NHL. And to Rob's point, with the salary cap being what it is and people and teams still trying to navigate, I think the next few days there could still be a lot of trades in the NHL.
Yeah, it's been, I'd say, just overall a more entertaining offseason than I thought, just because like the actual pool of high-end fridges isn't great compared to some years. But Chicago, man.
I don't know what they're doing.
I love their tweet yesterday with the, like, the, you know,
the emoji eyes.
The emoji eyes. Yeah. And Vingan tweets at that FFS, which I agree. I think Vingan's like freaking out about the Chicago.
I guess so.
Situation. But no, it has been entertaining. I think today's going to be a wild one.
I think it is too. We'll keep our eyes on all things NHL free agency today as well and see maybe a few trades get made in the National Hockey League as well. When we come back, Mike Sando has come out with his annual quarterback tier rankings.
Oh, boy.
Where is Ryan Tannehill in this mix? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.